Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Inspiration and empowerment is the credo of Jacqueline Craig, a driving force in the Old North neighborhood fashion and arts community. We'll hear from her a little bit later. We'll also be talking with Joe Manis, who was at the Republican convention. But first, in 2012, a group of Catholic nuns took a message of social justice on the road by bus, with a new journey every year since then. They have been known as Nuns on the Bus, and they're on the road yet again. 18 nuns are traveling to 13 states, including Missouri, on a trip that will take them to the two political conventions and to Capitol Hill. The journey began last week in Madison, Wisconsin. The group is led by Sister Simone Campbell. She is the founder of Nuns on the Bus and is the executive director of Network. It lobbies for Catholic social justice. I spoke with Sister Simone as a group traveled across Indiana on its way to the Republican convention, and she told me the tour has been going very well.
Well, it's been a really powerful trip. I mean, we were just saying during prayer when we were reflecting that we've seen so much heartbreak, but at the same time, we've seen so much hope. There have been a lot of tears and a lot of laughter, but powerful engagement with the people around the country. Our people are hungry for us to mend the gaps and change the direction of our society. So it's been quite rewarding, I must say.
Before we get into some of the specifics of all of this, let me ask you to remind our audience as to how this whole Nuns on the Bus project got started.
Well, as a person of faith, I like to say it's the Holy Spirit making mischief. We started in 2012 when we had some notoriety because the Vatican had named our little organization Network as being a bad influence on Catholic sisters. So we said, how do we use this moment for mission? And we asked for help, and some 34 people gathered, secular colleagues gathered in our office, and by the end of an hour and a half meeting, they said, you had to go on the road, we had to push back against the Ryan budget and lift up the works of Catholic sisters. That was the beginning of it, and now this is our fifth tour. It's pretty amazing.
And how well did that all work out in the beginning?
Well, I think it has been an amazing experience of touching people's lives, but also touching people's imaginations, that life can be different. And every place we go, we have this amazing turnout. And I was sort of joking, sort of worried before we left, what if we gave a bus trip and nobody came, you know, because we're out to convene people. Well, we've had these great turnouts every place we go. So what we know, it's touching the hunger of our people in some amazing fashion.
How is your relationship with the Vatican today?
Well, the irony is the Vatican named us as a bad influence, but they'd never really actually talked to us. Now with Pope Francis, who says many of the, I mean, it's like Pope Francis says the things that we say, that we've been saying for 44 years at our organization Network. And so we have great leadership at the top. Occasionally in the middle, we have some middle management troubles, but bishops have different opinions about us. Some places we're welcomed and other places not so much. So, but we stay faithful to the gospel and to Catholic social teaching. And as long as we're faithful, then we don't worry about the other distractions.
Let's move on now to some of the things that you're most concerned about. Your message on this particular trip is to mend the gaps. What specific gaps are you concerned about?
Well, we got started in this because we were studying income and wealth disparity in our nation. We got horrified when we saw that more and more money was being shifted to the top 1%, while our people at the bottom were losing ground. I mean, they're actually, in the last 34 years, the bottom 20% of families, of earners in our nation, have lost almost 9% of their income. I mean, because wages are flat, and with the cost of living increases, they just haven't increased so that they've actually lost ground. And that worried us because we said, what's going on? Why did this happen? It didn't used to be this way, which is true. Between 1949 and 79, it wasn't this way. So then we studied, we did a deep dive to figure out what had happened, and we found seven policy areas that caused this huge change, starting in about 1980. Now, you could think this was really bad news, grim policy choices that are eroding the fabric of our society, but the good news underneath it is if it's policies that have made this mess, then policies can change it. So we're on the road to say, let's change it. Everybody laments it, but we can work together to make a difference. So we're looking at things like tax policy, living wages, paid sick leave, those kinds of things in a workplace where families can be taken care of. And then we have what we call access gaps. Democracy. One of our big problems is, one, people don't have access to voting, or people don't vote. We've got to change that. Healthcare. There's so many people. Well, in Missouri, you all know that Medicaid wasn't expanded, so there's so many low-income people without healthcare. That's wrong in the richest nation on earth. Then we talk about citizenship, that we need to pass the citizenship in a way to include immigrants in our society that works. And finally, housing. Housing is, I think, is probably the most difficult issue we're facing because we have the least amount of investment in low and moderate income housing. There's a lot of, at least in the D.C. area, and I did get a glimpse in St. Louis, that there's a lot of gentrification and these, you know, luxury condos. But what we really need are low and moderate income housing for families. So we know we have a lot of work to do, but the good news is there's some specific policies that we can change that will make the difference.
But, you know, it sounds to me, if this were earlier in the political campaign, that you could be riding on Bernie Sanders' bus.
Well, you know, Senator Sanders is an independent person, and so many of the issues that he lifted up were, in fact, the ones that we had picked for our Mend the Gap. We don't agree with him on everything. I mean, he's his own independent sort. But I do think there's a lot of convergence, especially as his campaign developed and he got more particular in his policy levels. They really do reflect much of our Mend the Gap strategy.
And he seems to have had some influence on Democratic Party policy, if you will, at the present time. It seems to be moving farther to the left, which is something I'm sure you approve of.
Well, it's not that I approve of moving farther to the left. What I approve is moving farther to what I think is the center, where we care for the common good, where everybody has a chance to participate in our amazing nation. And I actually had the chance to testify in front of the platform drafting committee about our Mend the Gap strategy and urged the platform drafting committee to look at the fact that in this time of anger, hurt, and violence, the thing that's tearing us apart are these disparities and people's fear of each other, and that the center of all of this work is coming together with some kind of understanding of the different perspectives, understanding of the racial divisions and the sin of our past, which is slavery, and that these ways of coming together. We need changes of heart and changes of policy, but I think we can do it as a nation.
There's so many elements to this that come into play. I mean, I think of redistricting, for instance. You know, not a lot of minds are going to get changed when their people are being primaried and districts are preset for people to just continue winning those districts.
I think what you raise is really important, but what we see in the nation is that we're beginning to have states who are in charge of this redistricting process to take hold of the process. Like, I'm originally from California, and California had its own initiative that gave redistricting to an independent commission that may not look at political registration as a factor of where you divide the line. And that has resulted in more movement to the middle. They also have this rule that the top two vote-getters in the primary are on the November ballot. And what's happening is, like in the Senate race, the two top vote-getters happen to be both Democrats. So they're on the November election. So I think we're beginning to see some. Arizona, too, has a move in that direction. So this is where we, the people, can make a difference. And in our democracy agenda, trying to get people's votes to matter, part of it is changing gerrymandering, this the practice of creating, as one of the members of Congress say, oh, the people don't vote for Congress. Congress votes for which people they want when they do the political line drawing. We're trying to change that.
A lot of people think that changing the redistricting rules could be one of the most important political moves of several generations.
Absolutely. I totally agree on that one. And what's interesting to me is a lot of us are worried about Citizens United with money and politics, and corporations have money. You know, corporations have free speech. But I think what we're seeing is that money in and of itself, while needed in campaigning, is not necessarily sufficient to, in some races, to win. Money doesn't always win. As we saw with Jeb Bush's campaign for president, he had plenty of money, but it never took hold. So we, the people, still have a voice in this.
Sister Simone, I have to take a break now. There are a few other things I'd like to bring up in this conversation, but let's take that break first. I'm talking with Sister Simone Campbell, founder of Nuns on the Bus and executive director of Network, a liberal social justice lobby. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And now we are back with Sister Simone Campbell, founder of Nuns on the Bus. She is on the road as we talk. What do you make of today's political rhetoric?
Today's political rhetoric is actually terrifying to me. One, because it works to create hatred and extremism. When I see some of the things that Mr. Trump puts out, it's all about divisiveness and divide. It is not about a democracy where we can work together to solve problems. That's why we're on our way, actually, to the Republican convention as we're talking, so that we can have conversations about how there are different perspectives, but we can try to agree on what the problems are and then move forward together. It's a huge challenge, but we're siloed. We don't talk to each other, and political rhetoric is encouraging that kind of both arrogance and fear. You can't run a democracy on arrogance and fear. We got to make a change.
With whom will you be having those conversations at this convention? I assume you're going to be involved in the Democratic convention as well.
Absolutely. We're going to both conventions, which I'm really excited about. Well, one of the things we're going to do in both is what we're calling Lemonade Ministry. We have we can't get our bus closed into the security zone, obviously, yeah. So we have lemonade wagons that have the design of the bus on the side. And so we're going to pull our wagons around town in the secure area near the convention center as well as the arena and talk to participants in the Republican convention. The sisters are going to be handing out lemonade for refreshment. And then we have a questionnaire with three questions that we're going to ask at both conventions and then compare the answers. The three questions, if you're curious, are who in your family is it difficult to talk to about politics and why? I have a hunch in both conventions it's going to be the opposite one that's a challenge. It is in my family. The second is what worries you in this election cycle? And the third question is what gives you hope for our nation? And I'm hoping that the hope message will be shared between the two conventions. If that's the case, then I think we have some cause to think that we can work together to make change.
And the results of these surveys, if I can call them surveys, will be broadcast widely, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We're hoping to have it up on Nuns on the Bus website within a week, and we'll tweet it out and we'll send it out and do everything we can to make it public.
Sister, you said that you think that Catholic voters this time around are going to play a very big role. How big a role? Bigger than normal? And if so, why?
Actually, Catholics have been the key bellwether voters for all but one of the elections since the 1940s. And so I think it's going to be true again. However, I think Pope Francis has lifted up for Catholic voters a deeper analysis of what Catholic teaching is about. Often, politicians want to make the Catholic faith just about a single issue, often the abortion issue or marriage issue. But what Pope Francis has done is to dramatically lift up Catholic social teaching that's been part of our faith since the 1800s, but Pope Francis lives it in a whole new way. And Catholics in the United States, especially after Pope Francis's visit last September, are keenly aware of that. They know that Pope Francis says that the economy is a moral issue. How we care for the environment is a moral issue. How we care for each other is a moral issue. And I think Catholics this time are going to be making their choices based on that under that leadership and that understanding of what matters in our society. Therefore, like the last many elections, Catholics are going to be the key for anyone who wants to win, either at the national level or local level.
And, of course, with inclusion being such a big part of Catholic doctrine, that's what you're all about, particularly on this trip.
Absolutely. Our last trip, before we did this one, our last trip was in advance of Pope Francis coming. And it was so exciting because our theme then was Bridge the Divides, Transform Politics. And I got to be in the chambers when Pope Francis spoke to Congress. I was in the front row of the gallery. I had a ticket from Senator Barbara Boxer. It was so exciting. I was sitting next to Senator McCain's wife, Cindy. We had a lovely conversation, and Pope Francis comes and is talking. And he says in that message, his job is to be a bridge for those who disagree and to urge all men and women to be bridges to come together. And it was just like he was talking our talking points. It was so fantastic. So I think it really is providing leadership and engagement for our people.
When he became Pope, so much was expected of him. Great change was expected within the church. Do you feel that he is realizing those expectations?
I think Pope Francis really is stirring up a church that had gotten pretty hierarchical again, and he's helping us recover the capacity to dialogue with each other. You know, he says that the only way to peace is through sharing stories about real people and through dialogue, and that had been lost for a long time in our church.
What are some of those rules that you'd like to see changed?
Oh, what are some of the rules? Oh, I mean, there's things about how we welcome people into our church. How do we welcome people to our worship services? How do we live the gospel in the public square? I mean, that's obviously what my life as a Catholic sister is about. And I would like to see more preaching of the gospel from the pulpit on Sunday to nourish our people to do likewise. It's a big challenge, but we're oozing. I like to say we're oozing in that direction. Of course, this is the same organization that took 350 years to figure out Galileo might be right. So the Catholic Church is not exactly noted for rapid change, but we have a deep history that's worth the effort to keep moving this way.
But you're not talking about such things as ordination of women and married priests and that sort of thing.
Oh, it's not my issue. I say I work in the federal government where I have more of a hope of more rapid change. So that gives you some perspective on this. I certainly don't oppose any of those changes, but it's not my, it's not where I'm called. I really think all of us have a call to do our part. And my part is in the more secular politics and support my sisters and brothers who are called to other parts.
One other thing I'd like to get to and take you back to the tour from this part of the conversation is you spent some time in Missouri. What stands out in your mind about what you heard here and about what people were saying? And how might it be different from what you were hearing from other places?
Oh, I have to tell you, we were in Jeff City and were horrified. I mean, the amount of tears that we shed in Jefferson City were, I mean, it was significant because of the struggle, the people there, that Missouri has the lowest pay for state workers, and state workers are struggling, that their public transit system runs from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, and that low-wage workers can't get to work or can't get to doctor's appointments on a bus, on public transit, that the disregard for hardworking people was huge. We met this one beautiful woman, Angie, who is struggling mightily and is engaged in trying to keep her neighborhood safe, but that the police were just driving by whenever anybody called for help, when there was a disturbance on the street, they wouldn't engage. But she engaged, the good news was she engaged the police chief and things are beginning to change. But she couldn't get to, the neighbors were afraid to engage, and so she's working at trying to get them involved. I mean, there's a lot of worry and disruption in your state. However, I have to say, we got to St. Louis, and we were on the Voices of Women organization that's in the Midtown area, mm-hmm. and my glorious, are they a fabulous group who are doing leadership training for the neighborhood and rehabbing housing and making sure that their women know how to engage in leadership, and they have developed a micro finance program with small loans for the women they know. And it was so great. The woman, Robbie, who was giving us the tour, she said, you know, we don't do credit checks. We do face checks. Yeah. And so they get everybody involved in making community happen. So it was both a time of real worry and upset in Jefferson City and then a little ray of hope there in St. Louis. It's quite powerful for us.
Well, clearly there's a lot being done, but there's an awful lot yet to be done that has to be done. Sister Simone Campbell, I want to thank you so much for taking time from your bus trip to talk with us. Have a good rest of the trip and continued success for your efforts. Thank you.
Thank you. So glad to be with you.
That is Sister Simone Campbell, founder of Nuns on the Bus, talking about the group's mission for social justice. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.